Hey, this is Gordo. This is another little swapcast. I did this one all the way back in July with James Cronin from the Crowbar podcast. You can find the link for that show in the description below if you want to go get some more Crowbar into your ear holes. But on this one, we're just shooting the shit, talking about the stuff happened during July. It's a nice little catch up, and I don't know, predicted a financial collapse that was going to be happening. Plans were being made. I could not remember the name of Cyber Polygon, which was going on at the time. I think I called it four different things. But we talk about that. We talk about Event 201, and we talk about fiat currency and how maybe a pandemic was planned. And we talk a little bit about Chris Benoit. We talk about, having a head, which seems to be, I think, a very important underlying theme to a lot of conspiracy theories. And if you can understand that, then the information being thrown at you by the tsunami of the internet, it may be a little bit more easily digestible. You know what I mean? It's very hard to navigate your way through this emotionally charged multimedia deluge we have been experiencing over the last few years. And getting your head right is a really important part of that, and it's something that I'm trying to do for myself personally. And we talk a bit about it in this as well, and then we talk about the true crime revolution, I guess, in podcasting, and kind of the specific demarcation of those conspiracy guys into like the conspiracy side and the true crime side as well. And I know some people are saying like the conspiracies are lacking and there's too many swapcasts and there's too many this and that. Really busy times over here at the moment, so sorry guys for, I'm forever fucking apologising, but there's always work being done. It's just like you can't always see it. It's the duck, you know, just floating along in the water, and then these fucking feet underwater going mad, or an iceberg, you know, if you want to do that metaphor. There's loads of stuff happening, and it's all really great stuff. We just moved to a new hosting platform. We moved to Megaphone, and thanks very much to Spreaker and all they did, but we're moving to Megaphone now, and the show is hosted there, so you'll be hearing different types of ads and stuff like that. And if you want to get it ad-free, obviously on Patreon, this will be up on Patreon too, ad-free. But there's a lot of work gone into that, fans, the whole fucking summer, trying to get that stuff ready, and just next level shit. So Project Bluebeam will be in your ear holes this week. I'm going to push the true crime down the way and give you a deep dive before I head over to the UK to do some dates. Unfortunately, due to be honest, spiraling costs and, COVID restrictions making those costs spiral, and travel restrictions that negated certain methods of transportation, which means more expensive methods of transportation, which, to be honest, I couldn't really justify or afford. So look at, I'm going to be going over. We're still doing the London show on the 17th in the Moth Club, and then we're going to the Chapeltown Picture House in Manchester still on the 19th, and then I'm going to come home for a week, and then I'm going to go back, and we're doing the Glasgow show in the Oranmore in Glasgow for all of those lovely folks. Unfortunately, I'm sorry Newcastle, I'm sorry Birmingham, I'm sorry Liverpool, you're going to have to hang on, so you can get a refund. The tickets are available to be refunded if you should so wish, or if you just want to hang on. I'm going to be coming back over at the end of April in a much more, a much more logistically friendly operation. So I'm not sitting around in the UK for 5 days, twiddling me thumbs waiting for the next show to happen. It kind of went a bit arseways, and with COVID and restrictions and live shows turning back on, and, musicians getting preference because their venues are fuller because there's people standing up and loads of people drinking, and just so many fucking moving parts. It started as one thing, and then it morphed, and concessions were made, and concessions were made, and concessions were made, and it eventually became, a very high cost endeavor. So I had to make the decision to move those shows on into April. So I apologize for that again, but it is what it is. So I hope to see the Newcastle, Birmingham, and Liverpool folks next April 2022. I will be in London, fear not. I will be in Manchester, fear not. I will be in Glasgow. That's if they fucking, I don't know, let me into the country. I've got my PCR test booked. I've got all my stuff, you know. Apparently there's no restrictions on the people getting in. You don't have to show vaccine passports or any of that kind of shit. But you know what, lads? It all could fucking change. And a load of money be gone up the fucking swanny. Because like, they won't let me in because I'm not vaccinated. So look, this is the crack. This is the way we play. And what you going to do, man? That's the way it is, bro. There is also a Dublin gig in January. On the 14th of January, I think, in the Liberty Hall Theatre in Dublin. So if you want to be in Dublin, and it means I don't have to get a plane to get there. Just to get on a train and wrap my head in a fucking plastic bag. But yeah, so sorry about the live shows. You guys were looking for an explanation. That's probably it. I'm going to give a social media post as well, but some people on Discord were asking what the crack is, and Shane ate a crack. So look, this is a fucking long ass intro. There's a great crack of a Swapcast. There'll probably be another one tomorrow, and then a Project Bluebeam episode. I am working with this new host, and I don't want to release deep dive episodes and have them go off into nothingness. So I'm just trying to make sure all my T's are crossed and all my J's have dots on them, and you know, that's it. Okay, so this shut up, Gordo. Into the Swapcast. This is James Cronin and the Crowbar Podcast from July 2021. Enjoy.
Hitler, Roswell, JFK, cryptozoology and NSA, global woman and 11 government lies. Tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys.
All right, sure. We're fucking long time in the pipeline, as we said before, but the man, the myth, the legend, Gordo, the conspiracy guys, finally here, as finally. We said, long time, and great to have you.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been yeah, a long time cooking. It's got a nice crispy outside, and the inside is moist and ready for consumption.
Yeah, that's what I look inside. Like. A good podcast. A crispy yet delicious inside, which will be, I'm sure we'll be talking all sorts of shite ruin said meal. But no, it's great to have you on, man. Obviously, explain to me now, you're from those conspiracy guys, but there's only one of you.
Yeah, there is now. I think, you know what it is? Those conspiracy guys was a conception of mine where I wanted to make a podcast, which was the done thing at the time. And I was working in a phone shop with a friend of mine. And I was like, do you ever hear podcasts? And I was doing conspiracies for like 20 years, smoking hash.
Oh, wow.
In Wexford, talking about 9/11. And but even before that, like watching The X-Files, you're into aliens and you're into like esoteric shit. And you're into like, you know, intergovernmental conspiracies and JFK and all the stuff, you know, World War II fanatic and was mad into history in secondary school and Rasputin and Stalin and all that shit. So I knew something wasn't right in the world. And then it just mixed together with like a sense of drug-induced paranoia and a general disdain and distaste for establishment authority while working in a 9-to-5 kind of retail job. I'm going, yeah, what kind of mad shit can I do to fucking not have to stand in this shop? And, I work retail and what would you call it? Hospitality my whole life up to that. But it also sidelined with, you know, a whole kind of tried out a whole musical career and then did that for like 6 or 7 years and then did another 6 or 7 years doing comedy and trying to get into stand-up comedy. And like, you know, I got a few ads on TV and got a few big gigs and it was real nice, but it just wasn't panning out. And I stopped doing comedy. My last gig I think was in late 2012, and like mid 2013 I started the production kind of ideas for Those Conspiracy Guys. I went like, yeah, look, fucking conspiracies is huge. All my favorite podcasts at the time were conspiracy theories. The Higher Side Chats being one of them, Greg Carlwood. And I was just like, fuck it, man. Like, let's make a podcast. And I was talking with my good friend from Wexford, Eamon, from his, he has a podcast now called Monster Fuzz. And at the time he had nothing, but he was wanting to make a podcast with me. And we were going to be two lads reminiscing about pop culture from the before times in a post-apocalyptic bunker. And it was just going to be me and him together talking about like TV shows and cartoons we used to like and comic books. and like fucking film character, comic book women that we got the horn for when we were 13 and stuff like that. Which one has the nicest nips? And we found out that that was already taken. And then, you know, I just kind of fell into the conspiracy part. And then one of the original hosts, Paul, he was working with me in the phone shop. And we were always talking about conspiracy shit, just like back and forth. And I was talking all bullshit. And it just kind of fell into, like, let's do it about conspiracy theories. It took 18 months and I fucking learned how to do website making and learned all about podcasts. And, you know, took my musical knowledge of the audio equipment and all the stuff. I had a little bit of filmmaking stuff and a couple of bits and bobs and, a half decent computer. And I just fucked it together when nobody else was really making it. At the time, it was like big studios had podcasts. You know, it was Adam Curry you were going up against. And now all you have to have is like a half decent phone and an inflated sense of self, and you can have your own podcast. But those conspiracy guys was born of like a lot of different long-term disciplines that amalgamated fortuitously into something that people just kind of resonated with. I'm not saying that I'm a soothsayer, but like I think if you go back to season 1 and 2 and 3, you could hear me saying like, oh, this is going to be fucking huge, taking over the world. Conspiracy theories is the new rock and roll, is what they used to say a lot. And I could feel it coming, man. The 2016 happened and Donald came in and it exploded. I think we were getting big even in 2014, 2015 when we started. And then 2016 it went, pew, and 2017 it was like, boom, boom, next level. 2018 was like, fucking next level again. And now we're, I think, a little squeak over 40 million career downloads. 176 Jesus. Released episodes, 800 public consumable hours, and another approximately 500 consumable hours of content on Patreon, which is what fuels the show. And 1,300 hours of stuff out there, man. That's those conspiracy guys.
That's fucking crazy, man. And also, like, just to have all of those stats, like, off the cuff, ready to go. But, like, I was going to bring it up, and I'm glad it's come up now. Like, I haven't met, and not to blow smoke up your chimney just because you've jumped on my show, but, like, I got into your stuff because, like yourself, working a 9-to-5, well, not a 9-to-5, working retail, and when I was doing stock and shit, I was like, right, I've exhausted every podcast I could possibly listen to. You know, nothing's really exciting me anymore. You know, anything like, because I was big into film, and like when we started out, I say we, just me, when we started out, it was just like we had a whole film section, and then I was bored of that. And my friend Sean, who got me into just those conspiracy, goes like, here, listen, stick this shit on. There will be at least one episode from the thousands of hours of content that there's there that you will like. And the one that I immediately jumped to, because I was a wrestling fan back in the day, was the Chris Benoit episode.
And that's very recent. That was recorded, I think, in 2018, possibly, something like that. There's a whole American trip debacle and the whole fucking thing. It's a real, you know, it's a sore point in my soul that it didn't happen. And I often get asked about it, and it's like, look, man, it didn't happen. And I really wanted it to happen, and I paid a bunch of people for a bunch of stuff that never happened. And, you know, there's no refunds on them shits. And, you know, sure, I got nice cameras, which I'm utilizing at the moment. But those episodes that were recorded in 2018 kind of lasted out to 2019. I made a few more. I made a studio in Dublin in 2020, and it was ready to go in approximately March 2020. And then, like Bo Burnham, then something happened. And we only got to use it about 15 times in September and October before we're locked down. Like, Ireland is the most locked down country in Europe, if not in possibly in the world. Restrictions and all that stuff. Like, so I don't want to be fucking annoying people and getting my crew, my amalgam of talented guests and co-hosts in trouble for fucking crossing county borders to try and come on the show and being caught at Garda checkpoints and shit like that. Chris Benoit was a really good episode with Jerry McBride, who's also on the Tom and Jerry podcast, and he's a writer for Waterford Whispers. Very talented and knowledgeable gentleman.
Hilarious.
What did you think of that show? It was really good. Like, he has a really fucking deep insight into like wrestling lore and the culture, right?
Yeah, like it was that, and it was paired with just like because I had learned about, because it was around the time, I suppose, because 2016 was the year of like the concussion, and people were starting to look into these things, like when it came to random sports, like heading a football or getting hit in rugby or like boxing. Well, boxing's like CTEs and boxing have always been around, but it's never been really looked into. And I was still very interested in that. And just like, it was kind of that mix of how much he loved wrestling. And the just the shocking and like the rise of Chris Benoit, and whoever doesn't know what wrestling is or doesn't know who Chris Benoit is, like Chris Benoit was this, like, not a pick on him until he started dabbling in the roids and juice and stuff like that. And then his MO was being a workhorse. Like, he gave his body and soul to the label that was WWF or WWE, and ended up, unfortunately, like going off the fucking deep end and, what was it, murdering his wife and one of his sons?
And wife and son, yeah. And then killing himself in a kind of a murdery, suicide-y over a weekend.
Mm.
Like, the grim details of it, you could fucking, you know, bring a tear to a glass eye. But at the same time, you're talking about Chris Benoit being a workhorse. Like, he's not just like a really hard-working wrestler. He is like one of the guys that created the culture of like... the baby face and the heel. He created the culture of like the family wrestling units, like where you have your, that eventually turned into like the different factions, like all of that stuff from Canadian wrestling, his whole family, his dad training him, being with, between him and the Hearts, and like the business of wrestling when it was just like, I don't know what age you are, James. What age are you?
I'm 21.
Fucking hell, dude. 21. Well, I wouldn't be 21 again. Where my dick skin was the same color as my leg skin. Fucking hell, shit. It gets darker, bro. Get ready. It's like who fucking wanked me off with fake tan on their hands? It's like, nope, the skin just goes like
dick
that.
Is not,
yeah.
That's not my dick.
I looked
that's
at my dick in the mirror thought. One day and I said, who is that? Who is that guy? Look him right in the eye. I remember like being a small chiseler. Now, I wasn't a massive wrestling fan, and you can say that you can hear that on the show and my knowledge of it. Like, I remember watching like Giant Haystacks and shit like that on like on ITV, and it went from that like fucking hokey pokey, like hitting each other with the chairs out of the front seat and going like big slaps and fucking black leotards into like full personalities, full like the business of wrestling, like the millions and millions and millions. Like, Chris Benoit was there from the very start all the way to almost the very end. And, like, his death almost could have caused, like, a rift, an irreparable rift in wrestling. But those lads like Vince McMahon, who were very, very, very good business people, who just got out ahead of it, who knew what the crack was going to be, couldn't maybe have predicted it. But, like, it's a really sad story. Jerry McBride is possibly one of the most knowledgeable men on pop culture that I know. But specifically... On wrestling, like, he's an absolute encyclopedia man. I'm trying to get him and Adam Burkers going, like, make a fucking wrestling podcast where you talk about that stuff. There's also a documentary, The Dark Side of the Ring, all about these kind of stories.
Yeah,
and it just happened to coincide with the release of this episode as well, recorded years ago. So it's nice to see, you know, like, we recorded in late 2018, and then like in early 2020 it got released. Like, fucking, it's a long time.
Yeah,
but
it's really fucking. It's rough though. Like, I watched The Dark Side of the Ring not too long ago, and it was almost like everybody knew, you know, what went down with him.
Well, what was going on continually, like, and his relationships with the people who were at the very top. He had like mentors and stuff like that, but he was pushed to the very limits, and was kind of afraid to say no because the fickle nature of the business meant that if you said no, that you wouldn't get asked twice. And I mean, there's a certain kind of a knowledge for people who would think like that. That, as braggadocious and as much bravado as he had, he was obviously riddled with self esteem issues, and he was riddled with, like, as he was fucking juicing and stuff like that, to try and get past the pain that he was feeling from these accidents and the pushing himself and stuff like that. The more he was trying to, like, steroids only repair an injury, so he was just working on his whole body was scar tissue, like, and. You know, it's just really sad that it ends up like that, you know?
It's not the only one. I remember even in that podcast, I constantly listen back, but Jay was talking about like who survived from that like King of the Ring match that year, and it's like three people are left, and it was like 15 years ago. Like it's
super sad,
insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Big and you talk about like Vince, and this isn't a wrestling podcast, but like you talk about Vince McMahon, like he's a cold son of a bitch. Like you hear, if you've ever seen the Andre the Giant documentary, if you ever hear anything about Chris Benoit, it was like, you're going to perform for me until the wheels fall off. And for both of them, it just like, for most people, it just, the wheels fall off and they can't hack it anymore. But yeah, it's fucked.
James, how many times in life can you see that happening to people and not have a visceral reaction in your own personal life? You know, you see people where they're trying to, I don't know, there's this whole kind of climate change, like global warming, anthropogenic global warming thing, right? Where people are being bet over the head with these statistics and these facts of like, it's your fault that the world is burning, the earth is burning because of you and your fucking straws, man. Illegalized plastic straws, right? So everyone gets like mildly inconvenienced by not making plastic straws anymore. And yet China and India and indeed the US are dumping like millions of tons of carbon emissions and millions of tons of plastics into the sea. And
sure,
like the little fucking Starbucks straw that we would like say, oh no, I want a paper straw actually, because we're being saddled with the guilt of all these things. Like there's only so many times you can be cut before you start realizing like, nah man, I'm out of here, man. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
Culture is really changing. You see people like Britney Spears in her conservatorship. She's there for fucking, I think, 12, 15 years in that conservatorship, and nobody gave a fuck about that poor cunt. Like, she was locked up for years and years and years, and only now I think there's a push towards, like, some kind of equity, some kind of fairness, some kind of, like, a generation is coming up behind that are steamrolling the social media apparatus to affect social change, right? So you're talking about like people like Vince McMahon pushing people to the edge, and you and I in 9 to 5 and retail jobs and looking to get out and looking to try and have options and shit like that. And then along comes this blessing of a pandemic. Now for some people, it's obviously very shit, and I understand that.
Yeah, hell for some.
For other people, they got to work from home and they got to realize like, you know, I don't have to be a fucking wage slave. And now they're wanting people to come back to work, and people are going, no, I'd actually rather quit my job and go fuck yourself. Then go back and just stare at a wall, because I know I don't have to, and I've done it for 18 months now. I know I don't have to. I know I can sit on the sofa with my laptop and answer emails while I'm snuggling my dog. Like, I know that if I want to take an extra long shit, that I don't have someone knocking on the door going, are you nearly finished? Come on, we've got to hit our numbers before 4 o'clock. You're like, get the fuck away from me or I'll chase you out of the room with shit on my hand. Like, it doesn't, it's not, I've done that before and it's very effective. It's not,
That's how you get fired.
I got promoted. Gordon shows a lot of ingenuity and innovativeness when it comes to productivity. I'm just going around. I'm the manager now, and I'm shit on my hands, just going, do your work. I'm just holding up really close.
You don't buy that phone. I'm going to fucking rub the shit all over you.
But people are, for want of a better term, waking up, you know, to maybe not the fucking global oligarchical lizard fucking archon interdimensional pedophile child blood drinkers. Like, that's obviously, you know, a whole other conversation. But they're waking up to going like, no, I don't want to do that. And I don't have to do that. And life's not about that. Yeah. And sometimes you don't get that until you're 45 or 50 and you're having a nervous breakdown. You're going, why am I working my whole off for some fucking law firm and coming into nervous breakdowns and heart attacks to pay for the liabilities of a massively expensive house, massively expensive car, massively expensive education for my kids? People are realizing that at 22 now, going like, fuck this shit. I'm going to go and roll around in a muck in a field and try and get somebody to suck my dick.
Honestly, like, for being 21, like, I've never had, like, as ignorant as it sounds in my life, because I've a fucking, like, I won't sugarcoat, I have a cushy enough life here in Dublin, but like, it's only now people are starting to realize, and me included, like, it's almost like the veil has been lifted. Like, as soon, like, pressure makes diamonds, but in this case, you've made us all really sad and locked us in for 3 weeks or three weeks, like 2 years. Why am I saying 3 weeks?
But like, because it was originally 3 weeks. That's why. And we were like, I agreed to 3 weeks. And it's still in the back of your mind. That's why you said it. It's in there because you were promised that.
And then I look at my watch. It's like, I was 19 when this fucking pandemic started or whatever, however old I was. But like, and people like my age are saying, as soon as I get my degree, as soon as I get enough money, I'm fucking jumping ship. I'm out of here. And can you blame them? Like the amount of shite that's gone on throughout the year, and like people really are starting to look behind that curtain, as you say. I know they're not like putting on their tinfoil hats and being like, oh, these fucking lizard people are controlling us and all this mad shit. But they are like, common people are starting to scratch a little bit above the surface, and they're saying, and it only takes a little scratch to realize that what you see under that thin coat that the media portrays and whatever, it isn't all fucking peaches and cream. It's not all rosy. Like, we're the only country in Europe to still not have fucking inside dining. Like, it's a bit nuts to me. But
I'm trying to come up with a term for these kind of things, you know. And I don't know if you know much about like currency or the, you know, global financial market or whatever. Would you know what a fiat currency is?
I have no idea what that is.
Fiat currency is like the dollar is a fiat currency, and the reason it's fiat is because it's been borrowed on. Each dollar has had $10 or $9 borrowed on top of it, printed out by the Federal Reserve. And I have a trilogy of episodes. One is Gold and Money. One is JP Morgan, and one is the Federal Reserve. And it's a 21-hour gargantuan of the history of the financial system as it stands from kind of the earliest coins pressed in salt to the creation of like a unified global banking system in the early 20th century on into like the modern day, and the abdication of the gold standard from dollars in 72 from the Bretton Woods agreement. There's shit going on like this week, next week, and the week after that's going to absolutely crash the world economy, right? It's all been planned. It's part of the Great Reset. There's a thing called like carbon paradox or something, or carbon flux on this weekend.
Okay.
And it's the same as Event 201, which ran in October last year in October 2019. Sorry, fucking hell. Is today Wednesday? No, it's Thursday. Oh shit, I'm like 2021? Oh no, 2020. Like you missed the whole year, you know.
Oh yeah.
So in October 2019, there was a year called Event 201. It was all the biggest multinational conglomerates and tech companies and all this, Amazon and Apple and fucking Pfizer and the CDC and the FBI and the fucking Ku Klux Klan or whoever else, right? And
everyone's
invited to this party.
The financial Avengers.
Yeah. Assemble! And they fucking all came together and they did like a war games type thing where it's like, here's a fake scenario. And let's see, has everybody prepared for it? Could it be done? Would it happen? How would we all get around it? And guess what the fake scenario was?
Was it a pandemic?
A global pandemic surrounded a coronavirus outbreak that was yet to be discovered, because coronavirus is not a new thing. There's been coronaviruses for years. Mm-hmm. A coronavirus type illness that would create a pandemic that would shut down, you know, all the countries of the world. It's basically like playing Plague Inc. Did you ever play that game on your phone?
Definitely. Love that fucking game.
Love that game. It's like playing Plague Inc., but you have like Amazon and Apple and Facebook and fucking all these people, and they're all starting like, well, if it happened, wink, I'd make policies on this, wink, only if the wink, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was all in October 2019, and like 6 months later, the world is locked down. So this week there was I think it's called Carbon Paradox or something like that. I'll send the people the real thing.
Sure.
I put it up on social media. And it's again another war games type thing. And you know what they're all sitting around trying to talk about? What's gonna happen? You know what the thing is?
No, tell me.
Global food shortages. Global food shortages and the inability to be able to travel and the crashing of the economies of the world. And what we're going to do about it. And then in August, I think August the 11th, there's going to be a new kind of Bretton Woods Federal Reserve Global Banking Seminar Conference, like
Jesus.
Where everybody comes together and they're going to decide what we're going to do because, you know, everybody's mad up to their fucking oxters in debt. There's nobody working. Like, everyone's still giving out, like, these pandemic payments to keep the economy going. We're facing the biggest, like, global crash of all time, right? And it's all based around the dollar, which is a fiat currency. And a fiat currency is, like, if people stopped trading with the dollar, if they lost faith in the dollar, because it's not backed by anything now at this stage, it's totally overvalued. Yeah. Then it would lose its value, drop very fast, and it'd end up going into like hyperinflation the way like the Venezuelan currencies did, or some African countries, you get like a $1 billion note or whatever, right?
Yeah, sure.
So this fiat currency means that it only works if people have faith in it. It only works if people want to use it and want to take part in it. It only works if I have a bunch of it and you need a bunch of it, and and you have something that I want and I'll give it to you and you'll give me the thing. But if you don't have faith in the money that I'm giving it to you, you're not going to sell me that thing. So essentially the money that I hold is just paper notes and it's worthless, right?
And
I'm
just trying to wrap my head around. So is this like, I know what happened to Venezuela, but like, sorry for any Venezuelan listeners, but like nobody gave a shit. But if it happened to the US... Yeah.
But if it happened
everybody
to the US,
would be like, I don't know, bollocks.
It would like, be all bollocks. But we'd go and move to another stronger currency, like maybe the Chinese yuan, something like that. We move to a currency that was actually backed by something that's of value, like oil or gold or something like that, right? So the reason I'm explaining what a fiat currency is because it kind of puts the concept of what fiat means. It's like a faith-based exchange, right? So I think now we're living in this concept I'm trying to come up with. It's like a fiat culture. So we're in a culture that only exists because people partake in it because they want to take something out of it. If we stop participating in it, the value of the currency of that culture dramatically drops. So for example, you know, Kylie Jenner comes out and says, oh, Instagram is so over. I'm on Snapchat. Blam. Instagram stocks plummet by hundreds of millions of dollars. Snapchat fucking skyrockets because there's like a cultural shift towards popularity and usability. You know, if Charli D'Amelio says some shit about a product, it's like, boom, because she has a very high value in this cultural fiat economy. But very quickly, like, you know, James Charles or somebody like that, who's like super duper popular and very, you know, influential and all that stuff. And all of had one fella to come out and say, like, he touched my dick. And then everything belonging to him is valueless. Absolutely zero value because it just, it's gone. Cancel culture, all this accusations and stuff like that. It's a real fiat culture where the stock market, the bull and bear push and pull demand and supply applies now to cultural aspects. There's nothing of monetary value because people can't really rely on money because not a lot of people have money, but a lot of people have clout. And that's why I think there's a younger generation, I suppose a lot of your friends would value clout over cash because you can nearly get more with clout than you could with cash.
It's this weird kind of hybrid with my age group, but I can see it with, because I have siblings, like, what do you want to be when you're older? Like, I want to be popular. I want to be a YouTube star. I want to be famous. Like, there's no sense of a job. There's no sense of I'm going to earn money. It's if I have a reputation, my life is going to be fucking peaches and cream. And now with my age group, it's half are leaning on the side of like essentially just being complete capitalist, like get as much money as you can possibly grab onto, or you invest in this, as you say, this clout, and then hopefully ride that out. Because like every fucking Tom, Dick, and Harry is an influencer these days, but how many make it as a living? It's the same with, like, I suppose, in a weird way, it's like podcasting. Like, there's hundreds upon thousands that don't get it all, get off the floor, but then there's these outliers like yourself that can, you know, live off this content. And this is like running away with it a little bit, but like reputation has become in itself its own currency.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
But the thing is, the reason it's fiat culture is because at any point, either the platform that you're on, your own good name, the information that you had proffered as true become false, or some other cultural shift away from, like, you know, the particular genre that you're in, people don't talk about that shit no more or something like that. It can very easily change on a dime, just like a stock market.
Sure.
If you have a company and the CEO fucks around and there's, like, you know, sniffs around, like, fucking embezzlement or, like, tax fraud or fucking he's like, you know, raped a bunch of women on Epstein's Island or whatever, the stock for that company fucking hits the fucking floor. Like, Elon Musk can come out and say some shit. Elon Musk is such a clever motherfucker. Like, he went on Joe Rogan's podcast, smoked a joint, and said, like, oh, I don't know, like, Tesla's great, but, I mean, maybe it's not my highest joy. Like, maybe it's not the thing I'll do forever. And the stock for Tesla plummeted, and then he bought fucking loads of it, and then he came out and said, here's a whole lot of new stuff, and SpaceX is brilliant, and then the stock rose back up again. I'm like, you're a fucking genius. And he did the same with, like, Shiba Coin and Dogecoin and all that stuff.
And SNL and everything. And, like, the whole Bitcoin debacle of him essentially insider trading with himself, but he's a fucking genius.
But it's all legal, and it's using the cultural push to influence valuable things. Like, he's the highest influencer level that there can be, because he's actually, like, billionaire who also has, like, cultural capital, right? So, like, this fiat culture, if you have your mates and they're out chasing clout, and they're spending loads and loads of time and loads of money investing and making, like, a huge, like, TikTok page, and they have, like, 2.5 million followers, and they have loads of brand deals, and they quit their job, right? And they're getting loads of free swag, and they're doing all these videos, or they're doing Instagram posts, doing stories, and getting paid, like, a few $100, a couple of $1,000. What happens all of a sudden if they're like, I don't think vaccines are cool, or I'm not wearing a mask no more, or... you know, Hillary Clinton killed a lot of people, made it look like suicide, or, you know, I like David Icke or Alex Jones or one of these other people who's not allowed to be talked about. And Instagram just goes, you know what, you're not allowed to say that. Fum, you're gone. That's a whole business gone. Like, if you train to be a lawyer, if you train to be an electrician or a fucking plumber, or I'm trying to think of, like, other practical things. Like, if you're an engineer,
like,
or something like that, you're qualified to do the thing, there'll always be a need for that thing, right? But if you're an influencer, and if you put all your skills and all your time and effort into and invested it in one platform like Instagram or TikTok, and they decide, like, no, we don't want you no more, you're done. Like, that's the fiat culture. Like, they'll pull the rug out from under you if they don't want you. And there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing you can do about it. And the same happened with musicians in Dublin, all over the world, but particularly in Dublin, where you're not allowed into pubs. Like, what the fuck are these bodies supposed to do? Like, there's fucking thousands of musicians all over the country, and loads of them centralized in Dublin, because that's where, you know, that's where most of the venues are. They're all in Dublin, and they're all fucking twiddling their thumbs because they can't play any gigs. They've invested thousands in their equipment. They've probably, you know, done demos and done recordings and paid thousands for all this stuff. Promotional material, they're paying for websites, they're paying for, you know, all these different accounts to host their music. They're paying for rent in the building, like, probably quite expensive rent, but it's worth paying the rent in Dublin, which is a very expensive city, because you'll make it back in the amount of gigs, because there's a lot of places clustered together. But then when everything stops, you can't make any money. Like, what do you do? Go home and live in your ma's fucking house or something, like, down the country. Like, what, you know? So I think at the moment people are looking at that fiat culture and going, why should I invest in a really risk? It's like investing in risky stocks.
Yeah.
I can invest in it. And if I play by the rules, and if I obey, and if I, you know, that fucking hat everyone was wearing, it is going to obey. If I obey and do as I'm told and follow the rules, I'll be monetarily rewarded. But if I try and push back with something that's inside of me, something that I think, oh, this is not right, and I speak the truth, I'll get eviscerated, and I lose my ability to earn, or at least my ability to create or have a voice online. Some people, it's not about money. And people are going, no, I don't want that anymore. On both sides. I don't want to be in a system that can, where my life can be switched off remotely by somebody who has a different, like, moral code than me. And yeah. it's kind of reaching out from outside of the conspiracy community, which felt at first, it's starting to reach out into other different communities now where people are putting up content and finding, you know, that they're getting people reporting them for sexually explicit material and this and that or whatever, or fucking, you know, this is not, we don't like talking about this kind of stuff. That fiat culture, people don't want to invest in it anymore. They're staying at home. I want to work from home. Well, you can't work from home if you come into the office. Well, go fuck your job then. I'm going to find a job that'll let me work from home. You know, there's a real advancement. And I think like from starting off those conspiracy guys years ago, I felt like a real outsider and I was living in the world of normals. And I feel like that the bubble has got a little bit bigger. The circle, let's say, has got a little bit bigger towards where I am, where a lot more people are thinking about this shit. A lot more people are like, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. A lot more people are like, you know, why are we doing this? Like, what's the fucking crack? Mm. How long are you going to keep us locked down? So much so that they're out in St. William Street.
Every day.
Going up against the guards, like it's the fucking Guildford Four, or like it's like the fucking Troubles up the North or something, like going, we want the pints. You know?
It's crazy.
Amazing.
But in saying that, to just take it, I suppose, a little bit away from the fear culture, and in saying that, like, I'm going to jump, I now know which rabbit hole I'll be jumping into for the next week or so, but you said, like, when you started that off, and like, because you must have started off with conspiracies, but then you've gone to the true crime side, like the toy box killer and Chikatilo and stuff like that. Like, how am I trying to say this? Has it had any effect on you from looking up all this stuff? Like, this is like, it's some, and you do quite a great job at keeping that torture porn side of it away from the podcast. So it's accessible to be listened to by anybody, but you have to watch those videos. Like if it's the Luca Magnotta thing, like you need to search up what the toy box killer did out in Mexico, or Chikatilo fucking biting boobies off of people. Like like the strange cunt.
Nipple skips.
Exactly. Yeah. Like fucking like
prawn cocktails.
Like, exactly. Like he grew up in that Ukrainian area where they were cooking children in the stew. Like he's a mad cunt. But is it like, this is just like white noise to me now? Or is it actually, does it weigh on you a bit?
That's a real Dr. Phil type of question there, man, you know? Are you trying to make me, how much would it be worth if you got me to cry on a show? Like, would that be a whole thing?
If you got to cry on my show, you will never live it down. I'll be selling fucking 48 t-shirts.
Viral shit. Do you know what it is, right? Do you as a man, and you're 22, I'm sorry, did you say 22?
21.
21. Nearly 20. 21 and a half.
Yeah.
Right, so you're 21. How often do you access your emotions? How often would you say you honestly interact with your thoughts and your feelings being on the same level? Like you think, oh fuck you, but you know, your brain goes fuck you, and then your heart is fuck you, and then your mouth is like okay. Like how many times do you honestly engage with your emotions? If you're sad, where you tell people you're sad or act sad, or you know,
it's this, and talk about fucking Dr. Phil questions, it's now like this cold war. Can I make you cry, or will you make
it's not a cold war, it's quite a warm war. It's a prelude to a very honest answer, but I kind of need a small bit of context from somebody else, because it sounds like a weirdo when I say it. Like
it's strange because I would have said no 2 years ago, but now through all of this, like I've had moments where like it's just like the sun doesn't shine. You're like, what the fuck is wrong with me? What's wrong with the world? Like you can't get out of this funk. And I wouldn't call it depression because I've thankfully never had it. But like this anxiety that creeps into you, it makes you sad. And I wouldn't say if I'm sad, I would shed tears, but I'd be somebody that would have a relatively short fuse. And if I'm thinking angry, I will let you know it.
Yeah.
Whatever. I feel like everybody has that wall that, oh, my heart's saying fuck you, my head's saying fuck you, but I'll just, you know, blurt out something nice or say whatever. So
would you sit with it? Would you go like, okay, I'm feeling anxious. It's lockdown. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in my future.
I don't know, like all the work that I'm doing in school and college and all that stuff kind of was a waste of time. So there's a little bit of regret, possibly because you trusted in the system, a little bit of shame, possibly a little bit of like guilt for not, you know, preparing better or maybe doing a little bit more work to get a bit further. I'm just saying these are universal feelings. I haven't stolen your diary and I'm not reading it out like that. Like, but I'm just saying these are the things that people like the sadness. People go like, I feel sad. And then you go like, yeah, but that's like saying I feel mad or I feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very front facing emotion. It's a very like broad description. If you get down into the nitty gritty of how those emotions are, then you're able to maybe look at like where they come from. People get triggered now the whole time. So if somebody says some shit and you're like, oh, that triggers me. It's like, what do you mean triggers you? That is after promoting like an adrenaline spike and probably some cortisol as a, like a fight or flight mechanism because I don't like that thing. I want to be away from it, but also I'm compelled to look at it. And you know, is it from an experience that you had? Is it from a core memory that happened when you were a child? That happened more recently? Is it just like a political triggering because of your identity? Yeah. It's wrapped up in a whole bunch of societal norms and societal habits that you have to partake in because your friends, if you didn't do that, you'd be ostracized from your group of friends. So somebody says like, wear a mask. And you're like, mask, I'm triggered. Bah! Why are you triggered? Is it because you're compromised or because if you don't wear a mask, all your friends will think you're a cunt? Like, but people don't go in and really dig into why those feelings happen. Yeah.
Well, that's what I think, like, to get, I suppose, a little philosophical on you. Like, that's what I think, because I've sat with it and stewed in my mind, but I think that's what anxiety is. That's like this megazord.
Yes.
But megazord. There's these pieces that need to stick together to make this thing. So that could be the anger. That could be the sadness. If you've lost somebody in all of this, if your job like isn't treating you well, like it's all just like more pieces to the monster. Yeah. And there's like, if you don't start breaking down these pieces, it'll grow into this monster and you won't be the strongest Power Ranger to fight it. It'll fuck you up. And like, it's this crazy thing now where I kind of grew up in the era where you're told to speak out about your mental health and stuff like that. But I've never had any mental health problems. And then now this is hitting me. I'm like, oh, this is what they were talking about.
Everybody
and now I'm putting that to practice.
Everybody has mental health problems. Just like everyone has like a sore ankle or like, I hurt my arm. Like everybody, it might not be a broken arm. You might not have ever had to have pins in your arm or an amputation, but everyone's hurt their arm. Do you know?
Definitely.
At different variations of seriousness.
Yeah, that's it, man. And like, as I said, some people have the knowledge and the, I suppose, the mental toughness to get over it and some people don't. So, yeah.
So to answer your question, with that in mind, that context of that, accessing of the emotions or the identification of feelings and stuff like that. There was a long time when I really didn't access any emotions at all, that I was very cold, that when something would happen externally or internally, that I'd just be like, oh yeah, well that feels weird. Have some cake or, you know, drink or drugs or, you know, have a fight with somebody or, you know, pick a fight like with a stranger on a Lewis and just be like, oh, you look like a prick, you know, or like going to ring up customer care for Sky and just like fight with them for 40 minutes just for the laugh, you know? So the coping mechanisms of how somebody would deal with those emotions. So when you're looking at murderer stuff and you're trying to get into the nitty gritty, right? So my show started off as like a conspiracy show with a very broad brush of what conspiracy theories are.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about 9/11 and JFK and Sandy Hook and all these like big hitters that are like, oh, yeah, that's a weird thing. And it's definitely a conspiracy of sorts.
Of course,
where there was a bunch of people conspired to, you know, whatever. But then in season 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and then 5. So I think 4 started the true crime ones. But most of the ones from 1, 2 and 3 and a bit of 4, most of them like had true crime peppered in them anyway. But they were just under conspiracy theory. So like Madeleine McCann and Charlie Manson and stuff like that, they're like a true crime case. They're not like a conspiracy. Yeah. The definition of what a conspiracy is super loose. And there's some people that are super purists about it going like, oh man, you used to be cool. You used to be doing conspiracy theories all the time. And now it's just true crime bullshit. And I'm like, but sure, half the stuff before it was labeled true crime was true crime anyway. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So with the proliferation and popularity of the true crime genre in podcasting because of stuff like S-Serial and S-Town and you know this kind of stuff, West Cork and stuff like that, that, you know, it behooved me to have a very delineated true crime wing. But also I was looking for a way to be able to talk about all these mad cunts because like talking about psychopaths and murderers and people who are, you know, beyond the pale as regards like humanity and their fucking disregard for human life and safety and, you know, the social contract and, you know, cultural appropriateness and stuff like that, where you're not supposed to like Ed Kemper being a real fucking weirdo around young ones and then you know cutting off their heads and fucking their throat holes, or Ted Bundy going, hey, can you come over here? They were relying on the kindness of strangers. Like Ted Bundy would be like, can you help me with a box of a busted arm? And then the next thing she'd be fucking fucked to death in a forest and then buried and then dug up a week later and fucked again because he's a sick cunt.
Yeah, man.
And then he tried to blame society. Society made me like this in his interviews, knowing he was on camera doing all that shit. And there's people like that who are politicians. There's people like that who are like CEOs of companies that run the social discourse, like, or at least work in those companies, like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Well, I mean, Facebook and Instagram are the same thing, but like all of these, you know, the people running YouTube, like you don't think that they're getting their kicks and jollies the same way that, I don't know, Jeffrey Dahmer did by, you know, trying to bore holes in young lads' heads in order to turn them into like
zombies.
Sex zombies, because he wanted to have complete control over somebody. Now, whether it be sexually or otherwise, he wanted to have complete control and not give him the fucking horn. What better way to have complete control over somebody is if you're able to control their thoughts and their speech and the people they interact with. You're able to control the new things that they discover. Like, just exploring murderers and serial killers is a fucking gateway into exploring the people behind the conspiracies. Because they're the same people, man. They just don't go out and nickel and dime and kill fucking six nurses in a house like Richard Speck.
Totally. Yeah.
They fucking become the CEO of a company and they control hundreds of millions of people's day-to-day you know, existence. Like, that's the ultimate fucking hole in the head sex zombie. Do you know?
Yeah.
So, like, the true crime stuff, you really, like, I had my emotions switched off for a long time and I'm trying to get back into, like, feeling again and trying to
share my feelings.
And, you know, you're going through some shit, like, and obviously the last 18 months has helped or hindered. I don't know how you would say it, but when you're trying to access your emotions in order to understand somebody else's emotions, I think they call that empathy. Is that what that's called?
Yeah,
I haven't learned that one yet. But,
but
when you're trying to do that to a murderer, you're discovering the dark, you're throwing light into the dark corners of what humanity is. Do you know?
Yeah.
We're all in this big room and there's cunts in the dark in the corners and they're still in the room and they still have as much sway and they still have as much, you know, input as the rest of us, but there's nobody shining any lights on them. Nobody's talking to them. Like, let's look at those people and learn from it. They're historical. They're historical markers. So my show is now a history show more than anything. Like, I talk about history. And I look at it through a conspiratorial lens. It's just the function of examining history is conspiracy theory. But it's still, this shit happened. These people did it. Here's another lad like it. I predict that this thing is going to happen into the future. And then it does, because it's happened already. So it didn't turn into a true crime show. It already kind of was, but I just labeled it differently. But it doesn't affect me, I don't think, anymore. I'm kind of used to it. I know it's a story and it's not really like, it doesn't hang on me.
Yeah,
but I would
I
would still think like, fuck, there's people out there like that, man. Still.
Yeah.
You know, Larry Murphy is still free. Like,
He's a fucking carpenter or something now. It's crazy. And like, I think this is going to be the smoothest segue ever now, because like, we can look at Jeffrey Dahmer, we can look at Ed Kemper, and we can look at like Gacy or whoever out in the States, but there's still that, I suppose, oh, there's nobody around here like that. You know, there's nobody in Dublin that's like that. There's nobody out in West Cork in school like that.
It's a it's a numbers game, though. It's a numbers game. All you have to do is get the right like amount of people. Think about how many fucking serial killers are in New York, but how many people are living in New York. Like, it's a fucking numbers game.
I always used to think that, like, because I remember going out, like, and there's always this idea, like, oh, Dublin people think, or, like, if you're from any kind of city, it's like, oh, you just think Galway, and out the west is this big pile of nothing with just grass and hills and rocks. Like, I've been to the west, and it fucking is like that. And honestly, if somebody wanted to murder a total village...
Yeah.
And just knock the fucking houses down, nobody would know. Yeah. Like there could be anybody out there. And in this case, there now, whoever unfortunately took the life of Madame Tuscan de Plantier, like, they were out there in Skull in Cork. And I suppose now this is a lovely way of...
Yeah, they may not be still living in Skull, or maybe they are.
I know. And yeah, fuck, man. Like, it's where do you
start? The defamation papers are going to land on your doorstep, man. 100%. Not on mine.
Absolutely. So, what did you say about that? It's like, I'm still living in school. What do you mean by that? Nothing, Mr. Ailey, or whoever, or any other member of school. But Sophie,
Mr. Irish Cream, let's call him.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Mr. Shite Poems. Tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys. Where do you start with this? Sophie Tuscan de Plantier died on the 23rd of September 1996, 3 years before I was even born, at the age of 39. Independent filmmaker, one son with Daniel Tuscan de Plantier, and she was an independent filmmaker. Now, she came from the glitz and glamour of Paris. And I think the question in most people's minds when this hit, certainly in my mind, when she was unfortunately murdered, what the fuck is she doing out in school? Like,
yeah, I think the people there, a lot of them, I watched the Jim Sheridan documentary recently, and a lot of the people who own a lot of the houses out there, it turned at that time in the 90s from like a very parochial Irish village, which had a lot of like, legacy people living there and a lot of older people, and when they die they'd leave the house to a younger family that had moved out into different areas of Ireland, if not abroad, and then they sold those houses and people moved in from like England, from Europe, from America, and there's a lot of people all around the bay there in Skull that are all living there for 20 years or more, and none of them are locals, so like
there
to have a holiday home. Yeah, blow-ins. Like, so to have a holiday home as a kind of a glitz and glam Paris, Parisian filmmaker married to a very rich and famous like director and film producer. Like 400 films or something he has under his belt.
Crazy.
Know?
Like he's sitting there shoulder to shoulder with Jack Nicklaus. Like he was the top fucking dog in Paris. And I didn't realize this, but I had to do a bit of minimal digging. She actually went out when she was in her teens, and she had an exchange out in some part of Ireland. I don't know if it was Cork now, but that's apparently the origin. She liked it so much that, listen, I'll just buy a house with all my boatloads of cash that I have, I suppose, accumulated from this great life.
The west of Ireland, in the southwest, northwest, anywhere past, like, you know, Tullamore. Very attractive to famous people. Do you know, like, Julia Roberts has a house out in Mayo here, do you know? What's your man's name? Ferris Bueller, what's that lad's name? Matthew Broderick. Matthew Broderick has a house up in Donegal, and he killed two people. Two women down his car. I just like to say that about Matthew Broderick because people forget about it. But like, there's loads of famous people out here. Fucking Matt Damon is practically living in Hoth or Bray or something like that.
Yeah, and who was Abraham My Left Foot and There Will Be Blood?
Oh,
the fuck is his name?
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Day-Lewis has a house out here, like one of the most acclaimed actors. So like, it's, you're right, it's not crazy to think that there could be the rich people out here, because it's quite, I suppose,
people
it's an
leave
escape.
You alone. People don't, Irish people, wouldn't be like, I wouldn't give it to him. I wouldn't give it to him to talk. Beyonce and Jay-Z walking around the Fino And people are like, I wouldn't fucking give it to him to fucking lick his hole. Fuck him. I know he's JJ. I wouldn't fucking... What am I going to do, Ward? How are you, Jay? What's going on?
Cousin, all right.
Cousin called Jay, you know what I mean? Love your music and all that. Your board is fucking savage as well.
He's fucking tops.
I wouldn't fucking give it to him. You know what I mean? He thinks he's fucking great going around. So that's the way it is. Like, they wouldn't... Irish people leave people alone.
Oh, yeah.
Except Bono, of course, who had to flee to the Netherlands to being called a cunt for some reason.
Pegging
Roxy's house in Killiney. But it just seems like for her to move to Cork doesn't seem that weird to me. It seems like a really nice place to go, very remote. Unfortunately for her, murder, too remote.
Yeah.
Do you know? It's a great place to go kill somebody, like you said.
It's like when you say it's in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, it is in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. Like it is.
It's at the very end of the middle. Yeah.
It's tough to find. Like they even say in one part of the Netflix documentary, like the only way you would find like Sophie's holiday home would be if you knew the area yourself, because it's all winding roads and it's off roads and stuff like that. So like already in saying that, like the pool of people that you can possibly have to do this murder is already limited.
Are you saying it has to be a local because the house is so hard to find?
Well, I'm saying
it's a logical leap. I'll give it to you. It's a logical leap.
What I saw and was told was that it would be very tough for a blow-in to locate the house and get in and out relatively, I suppose, unknown. But then again, like the house is in the middle of fucking on a rock somewhere. Well, not on a rock, on a hill. So like she could have been left there for days, which she wasn't, but she could have been if it was a little more remote. So yeah, that's what I think anyways.
Well, I don't know. Have you ever lived anywhere really remote?
Yeah, I have. Live is a tough one, but I've been and have lived in these locations. Yeah.
I think there's something about those type of communities, especially Irish communities, with that mentality, that kind of the local culture. Everybody looks in on everybody else. Everybody knows everybody else. If there's an extra car, you'll notice it. It's not like super remote. Yeah. It's not like the way Dublin is now. Not like in the rare old times, Jimmy. You know what I mean? When you knew your neighbours and you could call in for an old bag of sugar and an old cup of tea, and you know, you wouldn't have to ring, you wouldn't have to text ahead of time and be like, I'm coming over at 2:30. And it'd be me ringing the doorbell so you don't have a panic attack, you know what I mean? The rare old times. And
The good old days.
Yeah, the good old days. And people would know what you're fucking at. They'd know if you had extra people, if someone else staying in the house. Rumours would fly around, you know, like, I've heard of married women, and they'd have somebody else's car, and you're like, who's the car? Well, and there was a man in town, he bought cigarettes in the local shop, and then his car was seen, and blah, 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 and the reports of and the shopkeeper are talking, they go in and go, so Mary, tell me, you're the man with the long coat inside in the shop there inside, he's buying the cigarettes inside, like just this kind of like fucking... the grapevine, you know,
it keeps the things whispers. Fresh, I suppose.
Yeah, like they would know. And like you said, Sophie Toscana Plantia wasn't 24 hours out, murdered outside in the lane before the neighbor came down the way and found her. Like, I don't think she would have been there for a very long time, even though it is so remote. People would be moving around, people would be calling in asking, How are you getting on? And it's 1993 as well, so like there was more of that happening. Now people are a little bit more disparate, and social media and text messages, phones and stuff like.
Yeah, no, it's strange because she was found by a neighbor that was dropping off firewood or something like that. Because like,
something really you country. See the like,
so yeah, super country, like fucking, I don't know, cabbages or something. But
I'm here with the cabbages.
Oh,
such a fucking clunchy thing.
And it's like, oh, you're having that, but I'll see you later. But like, really mind your own business type of shit. But like, apparently there wasn't a murder in school in living memory that anybody was there. So this is like completely new territory. And it, like, as they say, like, you would get paranoid in that small community and you would think, like, you'd be pointing the finger at the weird cunt in the village, and there's probably only a handful of them. So you're like, oh yeah, I'd say he could be doing it. And I'd say this like mad paranoia went through people's minds, like, oh yeah, I'd say it could be that fella. Like, I saw, and literally what you're saying, like, oh, he was in this car in a big long coat with a fucking hat, and rumors going around. It's like, oh, I'd never do it. You know, I'm perfectly normal. And I suppose the fingers were pointed at solely at one of the village weirdos that is Ian Bailey.
Yeah, the Sassenach.
Yeah. So, like,
of course, they were going to point to the Englishman.
Of course, but like, born in Manchester, but he was also
no offense to Ian Bailey, he's also a fucking bit of a cunt. He didn't do himself any fucking favors, right?
Such a cunt. like, I don't care. Like, if you haven't murdered her, like, okay. But there's no reason why you should still be on the streets for how big of a arsehole you are. Like, how do you get that 6'3" noggin of yours up your hole and get it out every time? Like, he had this inflated ego, and he moved after working in Manchester and in Gloucester and stuff like that as a journalist. And I think he had this idea that, oh, I could be like the savior of this. Well, not the savior, but I could be essentially the big swinging dick in the middle of this small Irish town. And I'm going to live this semi-frugal life. And like, I'm going to essentially live in a fantasy. And then he probably realized that, like, that fantasy that he had in his mind didn't mix well with the reality of the place. And like, even now, and even back then, they were like, Jesus, like, he was a dickhead. Like, he was an arsehole.
Yeah, even so, the Jim Sheridan doc, he was very, you know, brash, braggadocious. Yeah. He was very, you know, his machismo and ego were definitely on display. He was even saying stuff like, you know, my journalism career was floundering. So, I mean, what else could I do but, you know, kill a young woman and make a story out of it? And you're like, that's the kind of shit that's going to get you in jail, you stupid cunt.
But that's the thing, was it a case that, and like, this is all hearsay in my mind, but like, was it a case that his vision or his fantasy wasn't going the way it planned? And he was like, oh, I know how people are going to start talking about me, but I have to play this kind of cool, and I'm like going to...
Like, you're saying, like, he leaned into the rumors just to get a bit of clout?
Maybe he
invested in the Fiat culture of the murder at the time, and then the margin call came in when the cops actually went looking for him. He's like, oh no, I was only acting a big man to try and get a bit of clout. Do you actually think I did it?
Yeah.
And all his stocks went bottomed out. Yeah, that's it, man.
Well, the stock of Ian Bailey was fucking pennies to begin with, apparently. Yeah. With 6'3" and 6'3" full of arsehole, all of them. He's a, like, such a dickhead. And like, even in those, I don't know if you watched the Netflix doc, but like, he's getting interviewed, and like, it's like he's sitting there and having a cup of tea with you. And like, there's this one point where, not to jump the gun, but like, he was called many times by the guards in the area for beating his wife. And like, his wife's like, not a fucking pick on her. Jules Thomas. And like, not fucking picking her. And he's like, playing hacky sack with her head. Like, he's nailing her around the gaff.
Yeah.
And like, she got
Chris Browned around the place.
She got crispy browned. She was fucked up. Like, burst eye, like, almost lost an eye, apparently, from doctors' thought. And it's kind of sad thinking back to it. Like, I was watching this with my dad, and he was, like, shaking his head because the DPP didn't look closer into him being the possible murderer, because beating your wife at the time wasn't really that big a deal back in the day, which is sad to say, but like, they didn't care.
I have to say from the outset, I don't think Ian Bailey did it.
Really?
Yeah, and there's no evidence to say that he did do it. A lot of it is circumstantial.
And very.
The easiest option is not often the correct one. So
okay.
I think that it's very easy to find an outsider, a blow-in, who had a violent past, who had some sort of stake, at least in the benefit of the, you know, the clout and the monetary return that he got from her debt may have been some sort of a motive, like even if it's a tertiary benefit to him. Like, would somebody kill somebody in order to write a bunch of articles to make a bunch of money? Possibly. And like we're talking about those true crime things, like there are mad cons doing mad shit all day, every day, right?
Yeah.
Possibly. But the fact that there are no concrete evidence, and I think moreover, the blatant, wanton, and vastly prolific mistakes, the disregard for evidence, for protocol, the gross negligence of Ongar Síochána,
terrible,
and the coroner, the what's around his name, Harbison, not coming down in time, and the body being out there for I think 48 hours out of the elements, and you're missing out on the time of death, you're missing out on you know, all this kind of stuff. Evidence getting washed away, not under the fingernails, like all the shit that you would have to nail a cunt, especially like in an uncontrolled environment, like a laneway with a cement block, and there wasn't one tip or screed of evidence, as well as a whole bunch of policemen fucking it up. It really had the smell of Stephen Avery off it to me for making a murderer, where they just needed some cunt to go down for it, if not actually go down to hang the blame on in the public eye. And I think Ian Bailey was very convenient in that regard, and that it possibly could have been a French or international assassin hired by somebody to do with her husband, and that's why no one has ever been found and no one's ever been prosecuted. Ian Bailey is innocent in my mind, in the eyes of the court, the French court. They judged him guilty. Yeah, but the law in France is different.
Yeah, no. So they were able to
take
public
testimony and public admissions of guilt, said in jest or sarcasm, and use them as statements of intent. If you look at the Amanda Knox case, James, right? The Amanda Knox case, you had stuff, you had lawyers and you had judges coming out and saying, when the Americans were scrawling pictures of a buffalo on the cave walls, we had courts, we had a full judicial system, okay? So you come over here, tell us how to practice the law. Like, they were fucking stingy that somebody died in their country and they didn't know who done it, or they couldn't prove it. Like, they looked like fucking idiots. So they had to stick it to Amanda Knox. They had to give her the ringer. So, like, I think the same thing here with Ian Bailey, the same thing with Stephen Avery. There's somebody had egg on their face. The guards looked like fucking idiots. This was a like a rural, like remote private location. They needed somebody to go down, and if not to jail or in court, the French, they just wanted like Erbenge. They just wanted we have to have somebody stand for this, because as French people, she was a French citizen. We changed the rules in our laws so that we could prosecute people outside of our country for killing French people abroad. Nobody else does that shit. Like, the super French thing. And they're like, we're going to prosecute him. If he ever sets foot in here, if he ever sets foot in France, he is in jail forever. You know, it's fucking...
It's crazy. And then, like, you're like, will you let Polanski go? No, he's ours. Yeah. You're not allowed to have him. It's crazy, and like, we could talk and there should be a whole new fucking show of how bad the guards at the time did. Like there was some fella, or they didn't have a photographer because cameras were so tough to have back those days, to try and take a picture. Ian Bailey's hands that were all cut up allegedly from the barbed wire and the brambles and stuff, and they were like, we don't have a camera around here. Well, what's our next best option? Right, well, we're just going to fucking trace his hand and draw a few fucking lines on it. It's like, oh, look, there's the scrapes there. Go on, Ian. You're fucked now. You know, down the Swanee. Like, no wonder he got off. And now a gate, like, mysteriously goes missing that had blood on it. Like, they didn't paint themselves in glory. I think you're, I think now that I have another opinion coming in on this, you're starting to maybe open my eyes a little bit. And you're right. Somebody needed to have their head on the chopping block so it didn't look like they were completely incompetent. But even without having somebody on the block, they looked even more incompetent.
Yeah, and Ian Bailey just fit the profile. He was a stranger in town. Plus the fact he did a fucking My Cousin Vinny on it. Like all over the town. You know what I mean? You ever watch My Cousin Vinny?
Of course. Classic.
And he's like, I shot the clerk. You say you heard it himself, ladies and gentlemen. He said, I shot the clerk. I asked him again. He said, I shot the clerk. Like, Ian Bailey's going around going, of course I killed her. And on paper, French cunt with no fucking sense of irony is looking at that going, well, he said he killed her, so, you know, put it to the court. Like, it's bananas. Now, I know a lot of people are probably going to be stinging at me for saying, Ian Bailey's totally guilty. Have you listened to the West Cork podcast? And I'm like, yeah, because the West Cork podcast also have an agenda and they also want to be able to wrap it up nicely with a bow and leave you wondering, geez, did Ian Bailey do it? And go like, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but maybe he did. And that's fucking great storytelling. It's good business for podcasting. It fucking smashed all the charts, got super famous. Totally. Sam Bungie did a world tour. Like, he did his job. But definitely at the expense of the reputation of Ian Bailey. Like, I don't know, man. Like, there's a lot to be said for proper jurisprudence. Yeah, like, there's a lot to be said.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if it was me or you, wouldn't you like to be able to go like, okay, well, I want to be able to have an unimpeachable representation in court and not have, you know, the likes of, what's your man's name from Stephen Avery case, Katz, you know, that guy, the lawyer?
Yeah.
Who do daily briefings and go, here's all the reasons that Stephen Avery is guilty, but not in court. Okay. And like, what a little slimy cunt, like, to do that.
Like, and then with this, but then not to go back and forth in like in chronological order, but like there was a point where Bailey was a freelance journalist. He knew how to play that game of journalism.
He
played the game and he played it well. And he even said, oh, I made enemies. And that's how you know you're doing your job like well, if you're making enemies.
That's what cunts say.
Well, you won't find a bigger cunt than Ian Bailey.
Cunts often say that. It's like, well, I know I'm doing a good job if I'm making enemies. And like, no, you're being a great cunt though.
Absolute cunt. But that's his job, I suppose.
You need a heel. You need a heel, right?
Listen, there's always going to be a Stone Cold to the Benoit. Does that line up? Is that it? There's always going to be the CTEs to Benoit. But there was this point where like, oh, a girl's being murdered in school. And he goes, oh, yes, but she wasn't like sexually defiled or assaulted. It's like, but like nobody's seen the body yet, Ian. Like, how do you know? It's just like, oh, it's just handiwork. And there's pictures of him looking in the window. And then there was this huge, I suppose, but then you can say that's just because he's a freelance writer. I mean, you can't train an old dog to do new tricks. That's his MO. And then there's this whole idea that she had a lover over, that there was two glasses on the counterboard, which is completely, like, that's bollocks.
Total fabrication and an emotional, it's an emotional appeal to fill in the blanks in a narrative. There was talk of, like, here we go now. There was two chairs in the kitchen, both facing each other. Possibly the chairs of two lovers exchanging a romantic conversation over a fireplace. Or possibly it was some French bitch with cold feet reading her book and throwing her feet up on the chair in front of the fucking range. Like, why would you manufacture a false a narrative that's a gross appeal to emotion in order to create another emotion inside of somebody, which is like disdain, suspicion, you know, the infidelity. Like, it's and you know what that is? That telling that story with the two chairs, that's almost like the grandest sin of victim blaming, because she was an adulterous woman who was staying in a mysteriously and inexplicably staying in a house away from her husband and her child at Christmas time.
Child, yeah.
Like, why would you leave your child at Christmas time, you bad mother? And also, you slutty fucking sloppy pussy cunt sitting opposite a man in a chair that's not your husband. How dare you even open your mouth to another man that doesn't have a ring on it that matches your ring, you fucking slut. I'm glad you got killed. Like, that's some tabloid
back then.
But some tabloid fucking paper selling bullshit, son.
Oh, like, absolutely.
That's what they were at. All up and down. To Bailey, to Sophie Toscano de Plantier, up and down, until it became such an untenable force for mistakes and negligence on the part of the guards that they just had to, like, lock it down. All narratives converging to one. Let's make this and try and hammer it in. Dude, there's a fucking series on Netflix. It might be on Sky as well now. Confessions is called.
Okay.
And it's a whole series of, I think, about 24 people who were arrested. Now, I know it's American cops, so it's probably doesn't apply here, but they're arrested by American police, and basically, like, poor Brendan Dassey, forced into a false confession, or they were asked questions around and around and around in circles over like 10 or 12 or 14 or 24 hours, and they got two answers wrong that didn't match. And then they were like, well, you got that wrong, so bam. And they just needed to nail somebody for this fucking murder, and you didn't answer the question right after 24 hours, so they're fucking 5 and 6 and 7 years in jail before they're able to get an appeal to show that they actually had an alibi. And the reason that they were in jail is because they fucked up the interview and confessed by accident. So, like, that shit happens all the fucking time. These boys want quick justice, especially when there was no hope of them guards finding who actually killed her. Whoever done it was an absolute pro.
Yeah.
Nobody found anything. There was hair in her hand, and they were like, oh, there's hair in her hand. Oh, fuck, it's her own hair. God. Oh, there's shit under her fingernails. Oh, it's just muck.
Yeah, like, it's that shit. Is it a case, though, that it was done by a pro, or they were just egregiously bad Garda? That they were, they didn't have a clue. And, like, there's the sergeant who is in charge that was like, listen, that shit stayed with a lot of the men. It was like, yeah, because they got to be guards to make sure nobody was punching the head off each other after a few too many in the pub, and they could all laugh it off and, like, have money in their pocket and stuff like that, get a decent pension. Like, they didn't sign up for the life of a murder-solving guard like you'd have in Dublin or big cities or any kind of city.
It wasn't CSI Skull.
It was
Law and Order. Like, Ice-T is down in Skull going, hey man, this woman, she got fucked up real bad.
Oh, she did, aye boy. She did, yeah. She'll not smell around here, are you? She's having different look like you around here in a long time now.
Do you know what I mean? Fucking, the guy standing over going, there's a... Oh no, I was trying to think of what's your fucking man's name? He puts on the glasses and he's like, oh, we find the evidence. And it wasn't plenty out there. Yeah! Like the CSI guy or something. Putting his fucking sunglasses on. Like, you never get those lads. It was a bunch of fucking handball alley forward, muck savage fucking nyardy who didn't really know what the fuck they were doing. Didn't see it off the place properly. Also, like, the establishment, the Irish constabulary and the forensics team and all the shit that they need for murder. Like, it's 93, man. Like, we're not, do you know, we hadn't even had our third Roddy Doyle film at that point. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, Ireland was very young. And
we didn't even have the snapper yet.
Yeah. Like, it's how do you get somebody down to find a murder of a woman who's been out in the rain for 2 days? Like, with DNA evidence that just, like, everyone forgets, like, DNA only came in the mid-80s and only came into Ireland in the early 90s. So, like, brand new technology. You know what? It's the fucking best time in the world and the best place in the world to be a murderer.
Absolutely.
You totally get away with it, man.
Absolutely. Now, but, like, this is where it starts to get, I would say, a bit funky. This is where I would start to maybe question, because until you've come along, and I'm sure you're a fucking pro at making people like look at the other side of the coin. This is where it gets a little funky for me, if Bailey did it or not. Now, Marie Farrell was the key witness, I suppose, to pinpoint Bailey at Kilfada Bridge.
Yes.
Which is
This is the essential evidence.
Like, and she said was wholeheartedly, she was very credible. I saw Ian Bailey at Kilfada Bridge.
Which why is, would you doubt like, her?
Why would you? She there's no MO. Nope. Like, there's no reason. She's just she's a fucking nobody from the back arse out nowhere. Like, what was the reason to not believe her? But at the same time, as you tend to do, look at the other side of the coin. Why would you believe her?
You know, nobody's going to come out and be a witness for a murder case if they're going to be lying. Why would anyone have the motivation or the inclination to lie?
But it turns out
that she was actually telling porcupines, right?
She was telling a load of shit. She was telling garbage, like straight up garbage coming out of her mouth in court. And this is where it gets even a little stranger. Bailey sued 8 different publications for libel.
Simultaneously. So it was a defamation bukkake.
Oh my God, there was fucking false allegations coming everywhere.
Yeah, we just did that identically on the video, by the way. That looked really fucked up. Just went straight for the fucking...
Just straight in. Visual aids helped me learn. Yeah.
That's what you get visual aids, is that the bukkake parties coming in your eye.
No. But this is like the closing shit. Like, he brought all of these publications together. He says, oh, you can go to the Supreme Court and you can get like bountiful amounts of money.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'll take it in the circuit court.
You could get an infinite amount of money at the Supreme Court.
But in saying that, he was like, I'm not doing it for the cash. Mm. But there's that other side. It's like, well, if it's just the circuit court, I don't have to deal with a jury. I can just deal with a judge.
So instead of 13 people have to convince, it's only the one.
Only the one cut in the box. Yeah. And
I mean, technically, that could be suspicious. That could be suspicious actions. It could be an intent. But then again, the nobility in that decision to not be going for the big payout, the big money. He just wanted to clear his name. And I think his legal counsel advised him, look, if you go for the Supreme Court, sure, you'll get your ruling. It's a sword with two sides, you know.
Of course.
If you go to the Supreme Court and you get your ruling, you get a big payout, and it'll be a financial disincentive for the papers to do that shit again. But also, people are going to be like, you're only out to get paid, which would more lean towards you being like, morally guilty. If you go to the circuit court and you're looking just to clear your name, it seems like a moral victory over that, and then you could go off and be a journalist and still make your money and still fucking write a book about I was almost accused of murder or something like that. It was a clever choice, I think. It was the right choice.
He's a cunt, but he's not an idiot.
But the thing is, though, Marie Farrell ended up then, I don't know, am I stepping on your toes for this? Like, this is the big reveal of the whole case, it seems to me.
Go for it.
Marie Farrell telling Porky Pies, because not dissimilar to Sophie Toscan de Plantier, who was, defamed for being an interspousal hussy.
Sure.
Marie Farrell was playing away from home as well, and the guards knew about it, and they fucking leaned on her and said, you do this and we'll keep your affair a secret between us.
Nice and quiet.
That's fucking extortion. That's blackmail. How guards didn't go to jail for that, I have no idea. Like, that's an absolute travesty of the Irish justice system. And then it ruined Ian Bailey's reputation forever, and there was no retractions made. And then the French court took all of that stuff and then processed it as if it was real.
Mm.
And so now another guilty verdict has gone against Ian Bailey when all of the stuff was fabricated,
all hearsay and fabricated.
Conjecture, circumstantial. Like, it's all, I just think it's a real travesty that not only is Ian Bailey getting fucked, and he's a cunt, and sometimes, cunts get a bad run. And, like, if he was nicer, maybe, or if he was a little bit more humble, he wouldn't have got such a fucking shit attack. But at the same time, like, no matter how much of a cunt you are, if you didn't murder somebody, you shouldn't be nailed for it, right?
No, I totally agree.
And above all, and I say this on a lot of my shows, is that above all, Sophie Tuscandaplantia was murdered and her life was ended. No matter who she was or what she did. And I don't even think having an affair in a Cork fucking holiday home is really that bad. What harm?
No.
Right? But she was killed, and her killer is not Ian Bailey. It's still out there, maybe living locally, or possibly, you know, in some smoking fucking tin cigarettes in some apartment in Paris waiting for his next job. Like,
absolutely.
Who actually killed her and for what reason? Who was the mastermind behind it? Maybe they relied on the incompetence of some country guards, you know, like a Brendan Gleeson movie or something like that.
Sure.
I think it was just a fucking travesty. Now here, and I have to go with this, but here is a fantastic theory that I got from a very deeply buried YouTube video from about 12 years ago.
Okay.
The injuries that Sophie Tuscandaplantia sustained, the scars to her hands, the fact that she was holding her own hair, the bites and the marks, the scars and the chomp marks and the scrabs that were on her hands and arms, very heavily injured, and then a cement brick was dropped on her head. She wasn't hit with it, but it was dropped on her head, I think, when she was on the ground, and made shit of her head, obviously, because of the weight of it, right? I saw a man made a YouTube video that was very compelling. Why was she out in the lane? Why had she got laced up boots in her jammies out in the lane? She was out very early in the morning at sunrise. They couldn't tell the exact time of death, but they think it was just after sunrise.
Mm.
This man purports, and I tend to fucking believe him, because it's so hard to find the killer of it. Could you think that Daniel Tuscandaplantia, you know, they were having marital problems? That was one of the things they said on some of the podcasts, isn't it? Daniel Tuscandaplantia hired an assassin to kill her because she was being, there was infidelity in the relationship, and he didn't want her to take half his shit, like, or whatever. Possibly. Or possibly this mad country car cunt came out and he said, well, now, see, this field here, you know, this field would have had horses inside of it. And these horses, have you heard the horse theory?
No.
So this man said, so if you touch Tuscandaplantia, came down from the house, and she's coming down to feed the horses in the morning.
Okay.
And she put on her boots. Like, it wasn't like, you know, you get a phone call from a friend, they come down to meet me, we're going to smoke a joint down the field before sunrise. It'd be romantic, right?
Yeah.
She had the boots on, she had this dressing gown on and the pajamas and all that, because she was going to feed the horses. But they were wild horses. And she went over to the gate and she was feeding them. And I don't know if you know this, but horses bite, and they bite hard, and it's fucking sore.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the horses started to attack her when she was in the field, and she was giving out the food, and they all just came around her and started attacking her. And I don't know if you've ever seen horses fighting, but they rear up on their back legs, and they'd just be poof, poof, poof with their front
Bronco hooves, right?
So maybe the horses bit the shit out of her hands and arms and started kicking her. So all the bruises and contusions and all that stuff, consistent with getting the shit kicked out of you, like, her body was a bit bushed it up, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that was a bunch of fucking horses kicking the shit out of her. And the blood on the gate that we saw a picture of, but the gate went missing, was her blood. She put her hand on the gate to climb out of the field to run away from the horses, fell just at the gate, and one of the horses reared up and kicked the cement block off the top of the fucking wall that was sitting up on the wall, and she was underneath it, and the horse threw the foot up and kicked it, knocked it off the wall, and it came down and smashed on the back of her head. Maybe there's half a dozen murderous horses in the fields of Cork in the 90s going around going, fucking say nothing about that, right? Don't say nothing.
You keep your fucking mouth shut.
Keep your fucking mouth shut, or you'll be glue, my friend. I'm telling you, that is a very viable and often overlooked theory.
It shows, that just shows it, like, I feel like we've gone...
That's where my money is.
I think we've gone down many routes, very different alleys, but we still don't have an answer, and that just shows, like, how fucked it is. Listen... You have to be going.
Horses.
It's horses.
Horses.
But you have to be going. Yes, you're a fucking busy man, as we all know.
I got to go take care of my lady and my baby.
Your lady and your kid. Anyways, tell the people where they can find you.
DoseConspiracyGuys.com has everything. I'm DoseConspiracyGuys on all the social. And, you know, reach out to me. I'm quite active on Instagram. So if you have any questions or you want to reach out, Instagram DMs or whatever. And the podcast is everywhere you find podcasts. I'm sure there's something in there that you like, be it a crime one or a science fiction-y one or an aliens one.
There's
or
something for everyone.
A weird science or something about fucking, you know, cryptids or cryptozoology. If you're into history, if you're into comedy and you like a little bit of fucking mystery,
I think
you should drop in and see what you find. There's no
huge amount to get.
Fucking something there for everybody. Interviews and all sorts of mad shit going on as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, like the fucking, not to go down another hole, but John McAfee, the whole nine yards. Man. And congratulations on the tour as well.
Thanks very much, man. Yeah, I'm all over the UK in October. And awesome. I'm doing a show in the Liberty Hall Theatre in the Big Smoke in Dublin on the 14th of January 2022. So, I mean, if you're in town, I'm sure I could find a complimentary ticket for you and a friend.
Shit, man, I tell you, there's only one man I would bring, and that's the fella that introduced me to said show.
Stefan, what's his surname?
My man, Sean.
Sean
Heron.
Sean Heron. Well, Sean will be there at the Liberty Hall on the 14th of January.
Hearing your voice, what he will.
Hearing it all night long. Good man, Sean. And yeah, so I'll see the two of you at the live show, and you can get your tickets, all the links. I'll send you over a magic link and you can click in the description of this show. And I'm going to be putting this on my feed as well, so you can get it in the description somewhere as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on the show, man.
Gordo, and listen, if you're ever short a guest or need a fucking fill in, hit me up, my brother. Hit me up. This has been fantastic. Thank you, man.
Thanks.
Nothing but love. Appreciate it.
Good luck.